Blog Talk Radio.
Woman, songs of life we sing, songs of love and songs of joy, songs of life we bring.
Here we go.
Woman to woman, songs of life we sing, songs of love and songs of joy, songs of life we bring.
Sing it again.
Woman to woman, songs of life we sing, songs of love and songs of joy, songs of life we bring.
Woman to woman,
woman to woman,
songs of life we bring, songs of love and songs of joy. Woman to woman, yeah. Okay, Kayla, sing it down low for him. Sing it down low for him.
Good evening, and welcome to Woman to Woman. This is your host. I am Minister LaDon, and we have Coach D on the line with us as well. Coach D, are you there? Coach D? Well, it seems that we are having a little bit of technical issues, So hopefully Coach D will be tuning back in and joining with us. But for now, it is Minister Ladon, and thank you for joining us here on Woman to Woman.
Well, good evening. Coach D is in the studio, and my apologies. I was just speaking and excited and charged up, and I kept hearing my partner say, Coach D, Coach D, and I'm saying, I am here. I'm enthused. I'm excited. And I realized I was on mute. Hello, everyone.
Well, I'm glad you are with us. I'm glad you found out you were on mute. And here we go. We're off with tonight's show. And you were telling us how excited you are about tonight's show.
I am excited. Well, I'm excited. I'm excited from a standpoint of, I think it's a good topic. And I believe, hopefully, that we'll have a lot of audience participation. The subject matter is not really that exciting from a standpoint of it's sad. It's sad, the subject that we have to bring up, and we see it. And so from that standpoint, it's really a negative subject as far as what we're talking about, but I'm excited that we're bringing it up. I'm excited that we're using it as a topic of conversation to get why people do things. And so I'm excited. I'm just excited to see, because maybe with us being able to hear people's difference of opinions, we could probably be able to understand why people do what they do or don't do what they do, you know, what we think they should do, or, you know, just kind of getting a different perspective on why people are trending to film rather than intervene.
You know, it's so interesting that we are doing this subject. I want to share something really quickly, because I'm the type of person, and I'm recognizing this, that if somebody is posting a lot about social issues or things that are going on in the world, and, you know, that's all of their posts in social media, sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm tired of hearing that, or I'm tired of seeing that. And I noticed the detachment that I had as far as what other people are having to deal with, what other people are going through, and allowing myself to be detached from that, like it doesn't affect me, or, you know, since it's not happening to me, I don't have to be concerned about it. And then when we decided to do this show, it made me realize how something that small or how something that simple goes into play with just how everybody works in this world, you know, how some people can be more compassionate than others, how some people can begin to be more involved than others. But, yes, it made me step back and take a look at myself and say, you know, where do I fit in and this spectrum of concern versus non-concern, or empathy and compassion versus being a bystander.
Wow. I think that's what you were saying, that it makes you think, because the reality of it is, I was reading on a study in Boston. There was a professor at a university, and he did a study, and it was in Boston, and he did a study to find out, basically the study had to do with it was called the bystander effects. And so this study was speaking about flight or fight, and why do people film fights, you know, in public places instead of stopping them. And the number one answer for most people were because they feared that themselves would get hurt. So most people don't get involved out of fear of getting hurt. And I think, you know, Minister Ladon, when you said that, to have a first nature of doing that, I'm not sure if that's really embedded in people or if it takes a special kind of gift, because I was always that type of person. I can remember being a teenager or being a kid. I had fights growing up, you know, in elementary and junior high and high school. I had fights, but they were never my fights. I mean, I can count how many fights I had that was really my fights because the fight was directed at me. Most of my fights was me jumping in to protect somebody else who I felt like was being unjustly treated, you know, somebody that was either getting jumped on by somebody else or somebody that somebody wanted to hurt that person didn't even, you could tell they didn't have the heart to do, you know, to that they were being bullied. And I was always, it was like even something that's on my business that could, I could think of some situations where I should have been dead. I really should have been dead, not minding my own business. So where does it come to a point that, you know, we always tell people to mind your own business, and I get that. Minding your own business, you know, it keeps you safe. But at what point is it minding your own business? And then what point is it doing what you know is morally right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as we're opening up this topic and bringing out these different issues or these different perspectives, that is someplace that I definitely want to start with, because our perspective determines the way that we live our life. And, you know, when we started talking about this topic, I went online and I was looking for, you know, different injustices that have been happening throughout history and throughout, but even currently throughout our time that we're going through now. But one of the ones that really impacted me was the genocide in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a million people. I learned that there was a million people killed in a matter of 100 days. 1 million people killed in a matter of days. The different nations, their first response when everything started happening was to get their people out of the country. Not to come in and support the country, but to get their people out of the country. And I, you know, looked at different studies and different interviews, and a lot of people did not act, or there was a lack of action because they felt that Rwanda had no resources, that we kind of like be a motivation for them to come in and help the people of that country. I was like amazed at the response of people, and not only Rwanda, but you think about slavery and how we still haven't dealt with a lot of those issues and how they still go on today and how people turn a blind eye. Or we think about just any type of discrimination. And there's so many people who turn a blind eye because of their perspective, their lack of ability to put themselves in someone else's shoes, or lack of ability to be concerned about the well-being of, you know, it's crazy what's going on in this world. And not only that, it's going on now, but it's been going on forever. And I'm like, when do we start to teach our children to do better? You know, when do we start to teach our neighbors, not even just our children, but our neighbors too, to do better? And when do we ourselves do better? You know, how concerned are you with the next person? How many times a day or a week do you call somebody and ask them how are they doing, or, you know, if they need it? Like, how involved are we with what's going on in somebody else's life?
Yes.
Amen.
Wow. Amen. Amen. Wow. This is an interesting subject. And I know there's going to be so many different points of views, and we want to just make the audience aware. And Minister LaDon, I want to make sure, because I know I was having some technical difficulties right before we came in the studio, and I just want to make sure that you could hear me well, because I'm getting a lot of technical difficulties right now. So I just want to make sure, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Okay, great, because I was hearing some like echoing effects, so I couldn't tell if that was me. So One of the things we want to let our listening audience know on tonight, if you were listening in live in the studio, we want you to be involved in this conversation. We want to hear your thoughts, your theories, your, you know, if you're honest, or, you know, those listening in, you know, if you could be transparent, we want to know, what did you do? How did you handle these situations? What do you think about this new trend that's going on, where people are opting not to get involved? People are filming, they're posting, what we call looky-loos or bystanders. What's your opinions on this? Dial one on your dial pad. That'll put you in the queue. And we do have a caller. That was quickly. Caller, area code 510, last four, 7896. Welcome. Hello?
What?
Hi, caller. You're live in the studio. Okay, maybe that was accidental call. So, okay, I'm going to go back out. So, but we want our listening audience, if you're listening in, you have a question or comment for our team, please dial one on your dial pad. That'll let us know that you have a question or comment. Once you make your question and comment, dial one to come back out the queue. Then that'll, you know, let us know that you've already asked your question. And then you could dial one again to go back in the queue if you have another question. If you're listening in through the internet, we ask that you dial into the studio. That's how you would be able to participate. You can't participate if you're listening in via the internet unless you're live in the studio. So we just wanted to make you aware of that. We do want to hear your feedback. We want to hear why people do what they do. And I know that everybody have a different perception of why these things are going on. We, Minister LaDon, we just you were just mentioning some things. I think you said, and one of the things that brought to your attention, I think that really bothered you, or that kind of brought this to your attention as we were talking earlier, is some series of events that have taken place more recently. But this is nothing new. We're seeing a lot of this. What are your thoughts? I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I got some strong thoughts, and I'll share mine later. But can you imagine losing a family member and being able to sign on to social media and see the whole act play out right in front of your eyes?
You know, wow. I wouldn't even try and watch anything like that. They have posts of people being beheaded that you can go and find online, and just so many different things that you can find online. I think that with today's technology, we're more aware of things that are happening around the world, and it brings it closer, it brings it in your face, and that can be a good thing, and that can also be a bad thing, meaning now that it's in your face, you now have to do some self-analyzation and say, am I going to choose to do something about this, or am I going to choose to continue looking the other way, or am I going to watch and then do nothing? And so we have choices. You know, if you don't see these things or you don't know about these things, then you don't have choices that you're able to make. But with those choices becomes accountable. You know, when you become knowledgeable, there's an accountability and there's a responsibility that we now have. And a lot of us as human beings are not willing to step into those roles of being accountable and being responsible for our sisters and brothers. You know, and I even look at us as Christians, but, you know, me, I love to say believers, because I think Christians and believers can sometimes be two different things. And that's, you know, a whole nother topic. Our instructions are to love our sisters and brothers. And we don't have the privilege of picking and choosing who we want to love, how we want to love them, and if we're going to love them because we get something in return. And so with that being said, at the very least, we should always feel some type of accountability for what is going on in this world. So when you say, okay, how would I feel about going into social media and being able to find videos of my loved one being murdered, you know, that is my loved one being murdered. That should be my loved one being murdered. And it is devastating to see stuff like that. But not only with the devastation, now then what do I do?
Yeah.
As someone who is in this world and I'm concerned with the plight of my sisters and brothers, what do I do? Do I just talk about it, or do I find some way of becoming involved in the life of others around me? That may be mentoring somebody. That may be, you know, speaking out on social media. Whatever I can do to help, what is the action that I now take?
Amen. Amen. Wow. One of the questions that was presented, and I'm going to give a scenario, and I'm giving this for our listening audience. We're trying to pull you in. I could give my opinion. Minister LaDon could give her opinion. We could say what we think. I believe that what Minister LaDon, as she was saying, you know, as believers, as, you know, followers of Christ, we have a moral obligation, I believe, to do what we know is right in our hearts. And I believe that right thing it triggers even without us thinking about the consequences. And I don't know, you know, I'm definitely speaking for myself, and Minister LaDon, you could just, but I think that it's something on the inside of us that should trigger us to take action, not even thinking of the consequences when we see somebody in distress. I mean, if I seen somebody, and I mean, I've had situations, I can remember, you know, a situation I had, and this was in my younger days when I was clubbing, you know, hanging out, you know, going to the clubs and stuff. And I gave my life to Christ when I was 12 years old. And even in my foolishness, even in my seasons of disconnect and foolishness, because I didn't know better, you know, I didn't know that you're supposed to study the word. I didn't know what the Holy Spirit was about. I felt the Holy Spirit's presence in my life at various times and knew something was there, but I didn't know. I didn't understand. So I was a carnal Christian, but nevertheless, I was a Christian, and I knew that there was a God who loved me. And I'm saying that to say, because in my clubbing, partying days, I can remember, I can remember being at a Bible study. And I was at a Bible study with a girlfriend of mine, and we did the Bible study. And when we left the Bible study, we said, you know what, let's go up to this club that we hung out at. And we were going up there, and I don't think neither one of us was going up there because we really wanted to party. We were just going up there because we wanted to just kind of, I don't know why. We really couldn't even say to this day why we were going up there. But one of the things, went up there, we were going to go in, and we were sitting in the car talking. We both decided, you know what, oh, we feel bad. You know, we just came for Bible study. We're here now. We don't even want to go in. So we were sitting in the car reflecting on some of the things that were said in the Bible study. And all of a sudden, we hear these, what appeared to be this pop, 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 but it was gunshots. So we're looking around, and we realize that the car that was parked next to us, there was a guy sitting in there. And some guys had walked up to the window of his car and began to unload their guns. And my first response wasn't to take off. My first response wasn't to run. Those guys jumped in their car. They took off, and I immediately ran over to the guy's car. I immediately opened the door, and I began to hug the guy. And his eye was hanging. And I know this is gruesome, but they had shot him in the eye, so his eye was hanging out. He was going into in and out of consciousness. And it was just my natural instinct was I began to pray for this young man. And I began to ask him, did he know Jesus? And he went, you know. And I said, do you accept Jesus? You know, I began to lead him through the Lord's Prayer. And even though he couldn't speak fluent words, he was nodding his head. And then he died. He died, but, you know, thing has a purpose. And if you live your life purpose-driven, if you live your life for the purpose, you start understanding why you do. We couldn't understand why we went to that club after Bible study, but now it was obvious after the situation that we realized that being there, God had us there at that particular place at that particular time because I got an opportunity to minister to a young man that was, he was checking out of here. He was on his way out, and I was able to lead him through the Lord's Prayer. I was able to pray over him, and I really feel confident that whatever his lifestyle was, whatever he did prior to that moment, I really believed and I felt peace in my heart that that man went home to see Jesus.
Wow. You know, as you talked about that story, which was very heart-wrenching, it made me think and go back to the studying I've been doing for this show. And, you know, according to psychology, there are some people who respond or who are just more compassionate than others. They think that people are, there's a gene. There's a gene that they're born with, and it causes them to be extremely compassionate and extremely concerned with the plight of others. You know, and they say that how we respond to the world around us is based on our culture, our authority, our environment, our economics, our ethnicity, our beliefs, our spiritual beliefs. And all of these different things make up how compassionate or how involved we are with the world around us. You know, when you talked about how you think was to run over there and immediately help them, before we got on the phone, we were talking about the fight, flight, or freeze syndrome. You know, in psychology, they say that when you feel like you can, like you have the power to defeat a situation or defeat or overcome what's going on, you go into fight mode. So your mind thinks, okay, I could beat this. I can be the victor in this thing. But if you feel like the situation is more powerful than you are, we go into flight mode. So we try and outrun or avoid the situation or run because we're so terrified by the situation where we begin to freeze up. And so some people go through fight, some people go through flight, and some people go through freeze. But I think that sometimes it's a practice, a habit that we create more than this natural response that we have to situations.
Let me ask you a question, Minister Ladine. You're saying fight, flight, or film, or flight,
freeze.
Fight, flight, or freeze?
Yes, where you become paralyzed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got you. That's good. That's the four F's. Fight, flight, freeze, or film. Because really that's film, you know, that's the four F's really because that you know, that's another way people do it. And I think overall the human nature is just maybe the film this because they just, you know, people are just being nosy. But I think a lot of people that film are the same people that will flight or freeze. And I say that because a lot of times I think people are doing a moral duty by filming situations because so that they could now show the police, this is what happened. I got proof. This is, you know, this is how it happened. You know, so I'm not sure that everybody that film, now if you're posting on social media, I don't know, but I'm not sure that everybody that film situations are really doing it out of a malicious kind of thing, more so than in their minds they're thinking that they're getting proof. You know, it's kind of like taking down a person's license plate that hit and ran.
Uh-huh. And which is stepping in and doing something about the situation as much as you think you have the power or the ability to do something about it. Because, again, there are some people who don't step up and do things because they don't feel like they have the power to do anything. Like they don't feel like they're what they do is going to actually change anything. And when we don't feel like we have the power, we tend to just be bystanders. You know, we tend to just allow things to happen. And it really goes back to, again, when you feel powerless, it comes from all of those things that we talked about earlier, your culture, your authority, and different things like that. But if you've been raised to feel like you're powerful, you do more powerful things, or that you have a power. And when I say that, because some people might feel like, okay, I don't feel like I'm powerful, but you actually feel like you have some type of power when you step up or step out and do things. And what we have to know as fellow brothers and sisters in this world is that we have the power to change everything about this world. It's not that there's anything wrong with this world. There's something wrong with the people who are living in the world. There's something wrong with the way that we're treating each other. You know, going back, I'm doing a circle right now, but I really want to go back to our coping skills, because our coping skills has a lot to do with those people who say, you know what, I feel like I can change something. I feel like I have the capacity to change something. And so we confront the situation. Or, like you said, Coach D, we can become fearful of a situation. So that is the way that we react. You know, we may hide from a situation. We might hide from people or things. Or, we become paralyzed in situations. And I don't know. I just feel like we have to start taking more action. We all have to say that it's up to us to take more action. Most people don't move, or most people don't do anything, because they just assume that someone else is going to step up and take action. Have you ever seen an emergency and somebody says, you know, emergency situation, and somebody says, call 911, and everybody's still standing around because everybody thinks somebody has called 911. I think that's how a lot of people respond to the world and what's going on around them.
Oh, yeah, it's somebody else's job. It's somebody else's business.
Exactly.
Somebody else is doing it. Well, I want to share there was a question presented in an earlier post, and we got quite a bit of feedback. The question was, husband and wife are in a physical altercation. Do you intervene? Do you call police? Or do you film and post on social media? Be honest. And we had some responses, and it's amazing to me that out of five responses, nobody said they would intervene. We had someone say, depends. The problem with domestic violence is as soon as you step in to save whichever one is getting hurt, they turn on you, and before you know it, you're fighting both. You're fighting. I'm not trying to bad that serious. But I'm laughing not out of taking domestic violence lightly. I'm laughing because I've seen that situation more than one time where where you go to save the wife, to help her, and before you know it, you're fighting the husband and the wife because you intervene. Another person said, and I thought this was interesting because this person said, and they are, ministry involved, very in ministry involved, and their response was, depends on what city you're in. Sometimes 911 could be a joke, but aside from that, I'd call. So their first response would be call 911. They're not gonna step in, and they're not quick to put people's business on social media. So they won't film it and they won't step in, but they definitely would call 911. And everybody else basically responded, call 911. Somebody said, you know, sometimes they would rather call 911
then to intervene because of the, you know, because of them potentially getting hurt or even losing a friendship if it's somebody they know. So the overall response was from most people is call 911. I don't think somebody would tell us that they would film it anyway, but that was the overall response.
You know, and that really goes back to, I tell you, I've been doing a lot of studying about this, but most people try to avoid pain and suffering. We practice avoiding pain and suffering. And so even by going unconscious, practice avoiding pain and suffering of our own lives, we go unconscious, we go, oh, I need a drink or, you know, do drugs or whatever, to give us that relief or go unconscious to what really is going on. And so when it is affecting someone, when somebody else has their own pain and suffering going on and we are a witness to it, a lot of us will choose to go unconscious or avoid that pain and suffering. We just, I don't know, we've just been raised in this society or brought up in this society to make it a habit. That's why people lie. That's why people cheat. That's why people steal, because they're avoiding pain and suffering. And so because we make it a practice or a habit of it, when we see somebody else dealing with pain and suffering, a lot of times we will turn a blind eye to it so that we can avoid it as well. But the thing is, you know, that when we are avoiding somebody else's pain and suffering, sometimes that pain and suffering is brought back to our own doorstep. And then we are saying, I want somebody to help me. You know, how many times have you heard about a child being abused and, you know, a parent or somebody close to them knew what was going on and said nothing because either they were personally involved with the abuser, fearful, but they said or did nothing. And it just, you know, it just occurred. Or how many times have you heard about somebody getting killed, somebody's child or somebody's wife or husband being killed, and someone in the family knew that the abuser had issues, knew the abuser had problems, and yet they stood by and thought that it would get better? That's what we do a lot. We think, oh, things will get better or things will change. But how do things get better or change when we're always expecting the next person to do something about it? When we don't feel like we have that responsibility to help make things better. And we can help make things better simply by loving on each other. The love and concern that you show for someone else helps make things better. We can walk by homeless people, jobless people. Your own family can be homeless and jobless. Oh, they can't come stay with me. We become immune to the needs and concerns of everybody around us. And we start being selfish and only concerned with our own agenda. And sometimes we only help others because we have an agenda.
Wow. You said a mouthful right there. You have said a mouthful right there because, you know, I was thinking, you know, based on what you said too, we can't. And we've been in a society that's been doing that. And I was just getting ready to brag about the 60s. You know, I was getting ready to brag about the early 70s. I was really getting ready to brag about those times. But when you look at it like that, there's so much stuff that was done in the closet. You know what I'm saying? So much stuff that was kept hush-hush, you didn't dare talk about. And everybody knew what was going on, and everybody knew the dynamics, but you just didn't talk about it. You know, and that's been going on for centuries. But what I was going to brag about the 60s and 70s about was because I can remember being a little kid, for example, and your neighbors back then, even though they might have been some, you know, people that not the best people, unbeknown to you or your parents or whatever, but back then your neighbors had they really had permission to discipline your child. And I remember growing up, you know, in the community that I grew up in at my early informative years. And, you know, I grew up in Compton. And I remember that neighborhood, you know. I remember my grandparents lived like they lived several blocks over, you know. And I had cousins that lived around, you know, a couple of blocks over. And we lived there. But, you know, my parents knew my neighbors, you know, and you know, I can remember specific neighbors particularly that would walk the neighborhood, you know, and when you were out of order, they would grab you by the arm and they would shake that finger, tell you, you don't do that, you know. And if they, and then they would go tell your parents when they got home. And so not only did you get corrected and disciplined by them, you would get home and even get worse disciplined by your parents. And that was acceptable. That was a reasonable and acceptable thing to do. The term "it takes a village to raise a child" was very much in place during those times. And I'm a 60s baby. I was born in the early 60s. So I could say from the early 60s to the early 70s, you know, this is a, let's just say a 10-year, 12-year span, this was realistic. This is what happened. You didn't do that. I remember as I got older and moving to a totally different neighborhood, and I remember coming from the urban community of Compton and going into Cerritos and diversity, because I never lived around diversity. So I go to this city and it's diversity, and I brought some bad habits. I brought some bad words. I brought some bad perceptions into my new environment, and I remember the neighbor had came over fussing at us because she thought we were throwing rocks in her pool. And it wasn't us, but she thought we were. And I remember calling her a name. And it was a racial name. And I didn't know nothing about race. So I would not say I was racist, but I heard the terms before. And I just thought that was a perfect fit to call this lady that. And I called that lady that and told her, don't be blaming me and my brother for anything. And you such and such, so and so and so and so. And I thought it was over. I went back in my house, mind my own business, went to bed. And I can remember 11, 10 o'clock at night being woken up by my mom, who was spanking my behind because I had called our neighbor a white honky something, something, something. And she was beating my, she was spanking my behind because of that. Because that's the kind of society we were in. You didn't teach your children to disrespect an adult. And I didn't care what color the adult was. You didn't teach, you gave your neighbors permission to correct your children. And nowadays, you don't have that. You don't have that same structure. You know, parents will go up to a school and fight a teacher because the teacher has corrected their child who was very disrespectful and rude in their class. So it's like the more that moral composition has broken down to what used to be solid, you know, a solid environment for producing manners and respect and just compassion for people, you know, where people did get involved. If your neighbors were next door fighting, guess what? You did get involved. You went next door. You know, Bob, don't do that. Man, come on. Let's go outside. Let's go take a walk. You know, it was definitely a taking care of, annoying. You know, it was a moral composition that was solid, and that composition has begun to deteriorate, and it's liquid now. You just don't find that no more. You don't find. I mean, heck, people within the same family, within the same household, get mad if one of their family members, you know, an auntie or uncle or parent discipline their child. They don't want nobody saying nothing to their children, you know. And compare even with, you know, it's just really, like you said, people are just kind of brushing their hands off and stepping back to the problems of this world. And I'm not gonna get involved. I'm just waiting on Jesus to come. Jesus, hurry up and come. I'm tired now. I don't want to be involved in none of this. You know, looking but don't say, like you said. And we can't continue. I'm not telling people I'm not telling people not to be wise, because this is a different time. I'm not telling somebody not to be wise, and what I mean by that is, you know, it might have been foolish for somebody to run up and jump in front of the window of this guy's car, because it was already determined that this man was going to kill somebody or somebodies. So I'm not saying that would have necessarily been wisdom to jump in front of somebody's window with a gun to stop them from shooting somebody else. I mean, that's very honorable. That's hero status. I'm just not that hero. You know, I don't know if I could be that honorable. You know, most of us will take a bullet for our kids. You know, we'll take a bullet for our family. You know, we might even take a bullet for a close friend. We might do that. But just the average stranger, the jump in front of a gun, you know, jump in front of a train, I'm just not sure that the average person would do that. That's above average. And I think, you know, I'm thinking maybe that's what God is calling us to be, people that's above average, to be people that's willing to die. And, you know, and whether that's whatever that death is, spiritual or physical, but people that's willing to sacrifice for their brothers. And I just think that that's probably one of the weakest commands right now that we as humans face, and that is loving our neighbors like we love ourselves. And I think that's partly because a lot of us don't love ourselves, you know, and if you don't love yourself, you could never love somebody else.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, especially when you said, you know, that that's above average, and it actually should be an average reaction. And here's the thing. When we can start setting aside our own beliefs, our concerns, our own personal agendas, and becoming more involved with the world and the people of this world, those things will become that will be the average thing to do. But not only will that be the average thing to do, you will have less people committing suicide. You'll have less people taking over the world and like Hitler. You know, you'll have less people doing those things because we're more involved with what's going on with the next person. And so when we all can to be more involved, the world will begin to change. There are so many people out there. I read a list. There's so many people who live in this world, and they don't have a happy life at all, despite all of their efforts. And how do you not know when somebody is unhappy? How do you not know that your brother or your sister is unhappy and they're depressed by not being as involved as you could be? Not even as you should be, but as you could be. There's many people who live in this world without love. Like, love is what makes us respond to the world, respond to ourselves, respond with hope, respond with belief, respond with endurance to go on. And there's people who haven't been hugged in years. There's people who haven't been told, "I love you," in years. I think about the people that my their own business, I always talk about how she drives around with elderly people, and there's a business where people will open up homes to house these elderly people, and they're just disabled, mentally disabled. And they fill these houses, they get paid all this money. How many of those people in those homes have ever been told, "I love you"? So there's so many people going through life, daily life, without even hearing those words, without even connecting and being able to respond to love. Love makes you grow, you know. There's people who, you know, you think about just all of the many different injustices of this world and all the many different ways that we can become more involved. And the first, do you even know your neighbor? Do you know your neighbor's name? How many times have you been to your neighbor's house? How many times have your neighbor been to your house? Do you know the people all on your block? If something was to occur on your block, could you say you knew that person? We go through life and we have our own agenda. We have our own personal goals and personal things that we are so consumed with that we miss the person next to us who is crying out for help. That guy who went around killing people, who knows where his state of mind was. But if we begin to know our fellow sisters and brothers, we can begin to recognize that some people are not in the same right frame of mind, and we can begin to, you know, get them help or support them with help. Somewhere it has to start with us becoming more involved and not just worrying about who's posting what purse on social media or who got the biggest sign in or anything like that.
Right. Right. That's so true. You know, the gentleman did. I mean, I keep calling him the gentleman and whatever. I pray for the, you know, I pray for the families, you know, the loss. That was disturbing to me. Yet this man spoke. He spoke out clearly his various ailments. He spoke out that he had been reaching out to friends forever. He was actually a counselor for mental illness therapist for years for the youth, for kids. And so I find it ironic that he was dealing with kids with mental illnesses, and yet he was dealing with his own demons. And so he said that he had reached out to his friends and they clown him. And he reached out to his mom and she brushed him off. And now he's, you know, now his the love of his life is basically dumped him. And so he went on to a rant, you know, and it wasn't, the rant wasn't this, I mean, he was very calm and collected in his thoughts, but he had lost it. And he was letting everybody know that he know that he lost it. He know that he snapped. He said, I know, you know, but he was conscious about doing it, which makes it, that's where the cruelty part of it come in. It's because you're premeditating what you're going to do. So if you're able to think out that process, you're able to be conscious enough to know that some innocent person don't have nothing to do with your plight. That they don't have nothing to do with what's going through you. And if you're conscious enough to know that, you did know that because you were conscious enough to speak this thing out. You just didn't care. And that's what made it malicious and heinous. But saying all that to say is that he said that. And like you said, because we don't want to get involved. I'm guilty. I've been guilty. I live where I live in the community that I live in. I moved to this community. My son was about 2 or 3 years old. He's getting ready to be 15 years old. So I've lived in my community for a long standing time. And it wasn't until almost 3 years ago that I began to know my neighbors. I lived here. I didn't associate with neighbors. I knew my neighbor's next door's name, but I didn't do a whole lot of associating with her. I don't want to know you. Don't come and borrow no sugar from me. Don't come to my house asking to borrow some. Don't think you could come to my house knocking on my door because you want to come. No, that's who I was. I had enough family and friends. I didn't need neighbors. I got friends and family. I don't need neighbors. And I can remember a set of neighbors moved in, and the husband was very aggressive. He was very aggressive. He introduced himself. He invited me into their home to see what they were doing to their home because we had the same floor plan. And so every time I turned around, he was knocking on the door, stopping me as I drove down the street. And before I know it, I became very good friends with he and his wife and his family, and I began to meet his family. And he was the glue in our neighborhood, in our area. He became living here the least amount of time, but he became a glue to all the neighbors that had been here for years. That never spoke to each other. And he became the common denominator. Everybody knew him. And he made sure that anytime you were around him, he was going to introduce you to 2 or 3 more people. But that's our neighbor over there, down there. They got 4 kids. That's our neighbor. So he began to, you know, and so at that point, I began to open up my heart, really, and lower my fence. And I began to associate with a few of my neighbors, you know. And I still don't know all my neighbors in my community, and I'm okay with that. But I do have the neighbors right around me, the neighbors across from me, the neighbors, you know, two doors or three doors down, four doors down, I'm starting to interact. I interact with these neighbors now. And it's good because, like you said, it builds a community. And when you build a community and you start finding commonality, like we're all, you know, for the most part, I think all of us are believers. You know, we all have a center focus, which is God. You know, we most of us go in fellowship on Sundays, and, you know, wherever our place of fellowship is. We're finding a lot of common things. We're concerned about each other's kids. You know, we're concerned about our neighborhood. When we see strange things, you know, we've been seeing some drug deals go down. You know, we're concerned about that. We're calling and checking on each other, and we're letting each other know what's going on. So I think community is important, and I don't think we were ever meant to live independently or isolated.
No, we weren't. We were definitely not designed that way. You know, like I said earlier, we definitely need love in order to survive in this life. We're all fans. I love how you brought out the fact that the gentleman who, you know, went on that rampage was counseling others and then needed counseling. Because you think about the officers who have been involved with so many different types of violence and excessive violence, rather. You think about even Hitler and just the different people, you know, when I talked about Rwanda earlier, we have to remember that we're dealing with people. You are dealing with another person. And so in remembering that we're dealing with people, the first thing is, you know, when I think about pastors and how they try and support and encourage everybody, but who thinks about supporting and encouraging the pastor? Or who thinks about supporting and encouraging the counselor? We think that they don't need help, or we think that they don't go through issues, or that they are they have this magical ability to be able to overcome the issues better than we can. And you know, we damn them if they can't. But my whole thing is,
right,
you are dealing with a person. You be as compassionate for that person as you want that person to be for you. The Word of God says, "Treat others as we want to be treated," or you know, "Love others as we love ourselves." And so I'm saying all that to say, we are dealing with people who have mental issues. We are dealing with people who are thinking outside of the box. And even in dealing with those people who are thinking outside of the box, we have to be aware that we have the ability, we have the power to still change things that are occurring, change things that are happening. Hitler didn't ever have to be in power. But somebody said, "I believe you," and then the next person said, "I believe you, and I'll join you," and the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And the first thing that it began with was somebody looked away. And then another somebody looked away. Another somebody looked away. Everybody looked away until one day.
Nobody's looking.
And then they all had to look. And so we wait for these overwhelming situations where we all have to pay attention. You know, they got, like you said, the guy was saying, "I need help, I need help, I need help." And then when you have to pay attention, that person is crazy. But a person was crazy before they did that, and they were showing you that they needed help. They were showing you that there was issues that were going on.
Listen with your heart. Yes.
Even people who murder, they show signs. Sometimes we might not know what those signs look like, or we might not know what to look for, but there's evidence, there's signs. And if we pay attention, we can begin to, you know, present solutions.
Amen. Definitely great topic. I wanted to read another question that was asked, and the response to it, And what I found unique about the response to this particular question is that I'm looking at, though I don't know the exact ages of the responders, I know that most of these people fall in a 40-plus years old. And so it's interesting to see that we had a lot of people agree on this subject. This subject was, your 9-year-old gets caught stealing in the neighborhood store by your neighbor, which also happens to be a close friend. The friend confronts and corrects the 9-year-old. Do you agree or disagree? And in this case, everyone that responded to this post agreed. Everyone agreed, you know, with comments such as the adults, we must look out for our young, young ones to make sure they're doing the right thing. And then, you know, the sentiment that it takes a village. And I thought that was very unique, and I know we're at the end of our show, but I thought that was unique that everybody agreed to that action. Well, all it takes is one parent to act a fool and not agree and don't want nobody saying nothing to their child and don't want anyone correcting their child. And so when you get that one parent, then it causes the parents who do agree that this is a correct thing to do to begin to back off, because nobody want to. You know, I'm old school. If I see a kid doing something out of order, even if I don't know your parent, I mean, I know I can't be putting my hands on people's kids. I get that part. But I'm one that will say something to your child, and then your child could go back and tell your mama, or you could take me to your mama. But my thing is I'm old school, and I believe that for me to be an adult and see children acting out of order and not confront the situation, I can't do it. Now, they mama might get mad at me. She may want to come and confront me. She might want to approach me. That's fine. I'll deal with that. But I just think I would like to think if my son was out there in the streets showing out, acting out of order, that somebody's mama, somebody's parent, some adult would be wise enough to say, young man, I don't think you should be doing that. Or, young man, what's your mom? You know, where is your mom at? What's her name? Give me her number or something. Because that's why these kids are doing what they're doing right now. I mean, you know, that's why they're acting out the way they're acting out, because can't nobody say nothing to them. Society has made it where nobody can't say or do nothing to them, and now their parents have embraced that same thing and don't want nobody saying something to their kids. Now, maybe some parents don't want people saying something to their kids because they don't know, they feel like people are crazy. That, you know, that could be a reason why. But we do. You know, there's got to be some accountability. We got to love our kids enough. We got to love, like you said, our neighbors enough to begin to want to build build bridges and build communities that's saying we don't want our kids to continue to die in gunfire. We don't want our kids to continue to get strung out on drugs. We don't want our kids, we don't want to have a neighborhood full of teenage pregnancies. We don't want these kind of things. You know, I don't know. There's so much going on, and people, for the most part, have, you know, there's been people that stepped in to help situations and been ridiculed for it. And so they may have shied back. Well, I'm not going to get involved. I mean, if you had a, you know, not, this is to our listening audience, our callers, you know, I mean, if you had a daughter who had a friend that you know, allowed to spend time at your house, and she opened up to you and said that her mom's boyfriend was molesting her, what would you do? How do you handle a situation? Do you just stay hush mouth? Do you say, that's not none of my business? Or you just say, honey, I'm going to pray for you and your family? Oh, I'm going to pray for you and your family. I'm going to keep you in prayer, okay? Anytime you want to come spend night over here, you come spend night over here. That's safe. You can come spend night over here anytime you want to, and I'm going to keep you in prayer. Or do you intervene? You know, some people feel like, well, if I intervene, I'm just going to make the situation worse. And some people, you know, so that's things that we got to ask ourselves. At what point, where is your moral compass? At what point do you get involved? At what point, you know, at what point do you feel like you should be involved? When, you know, because to me, because people that went to prison, federal prison, got a whole bunch of people sitting in federal prison that didn't commit the crime, but they were what they call it, co-conspire. And a co-conspire is somebody
somebody go, people go and do prison time because they know what's getting ready to happen, or they know what happened, or they know who did it, even though they didn't do it. So to know somebody's been abused and not say nothing and not do nothing to help that person, you're a co-conspirator.
And even in getting involved in situations, what, you know, some of the things that I want to leave our listening audience with is, one, we have to analyze how we respond to challenging situations. Even within our own life, how we respond to the challenges in our own lives and how we respond to the challenges in other people's lives. Do you respond versus react? Do you have an emotional maturity? Because a lot of times if we don't have an emotional maturity, we can respond or react out of emotion, and the situation can be totally different. You know, you can have somebody who comes to your house and says, oh, my mother's boyfriend is molesting me, and he could not be molesting her. And then you could do this report or make the situation, you know, really horrible. But when you begin to, again, work on your own emotional maturity, definitely become more knowledgeable about the world and what's going on in the world, you can begin to use wisdom, and that will help you to respond to the different situations and or challenges that you're faced with. You talked earlier about the husband and the wife that were fighting, and how do you react or how do you respond to that situation? Well, wisdom would tell you how to respond to that situation. And so there would be a lot of different aspects that you have to take into consideration, which would then determine how you respond to the situation. When you talked about, you know, calling the cops and different things like that, and I spoke earlier about saying, you know, even when we're dealing with cops, we're still dealing with people. We're dealing with people who have been placed in positions of authority. Now, they may not have had certain training that the job requires, or they may be allowing their own personal beliefs to get into the way of how they do their job, but you're still dealing with a person. And so in saying all of that, or someone else in the situation is more wise than you all of the time, you respond out of wisdom and let wisdom teach you how to respond in those different situations. Wisdom will tell you, you know, make a telephone call to the police. Wisdom will tell you, this is a time where you can't intervene and get in between. Wisdom will tell you, no, don't get in between. But definitely you have to be emotionally mature. And if you are not emotionally mature, then you probably should start practicing and learning how to become more emotionally mature.
Amen. Amen. Well, we have come to the end of this episode of Woman to Woman, and thank you all for tuning in on tonight. We wish we would have had more comments from the listening audience on these subjects, but we did get a lot of internet questions and comments. We got a lot of comments and responses to the questions that were being presented in reference to this show. And I'm sure we're going to be having more shows like this because we're seeing so much going on in the world, and I guess more like you said, Minister LaDon, these are things that's not new. These are things that's been happening for decades and centuries, but because of technology, we're able to just, people are literally able to go right into people's living rooms, right into people's bedrooms. You know, we're able to see things that we normally wouldn't have been able to see without the technology that we have. And we are in a very trying time. And if you look around you, the reality of it is that people now today in 2017, there are a whole lot more stressed out than people
from 1917 and 1987, 97. So, you know, people are a lot more stressed now. You know, there's a lot more tension. There's a lot more awareness. Maybe mental illness been around forever, but there's a lot more awareness of mental illness, you know. And I think, I don't know if on one part that that's good, that we could identify sicknesses and diseases, we could identify them and then start treating them. But then the flip side of that, I think when we start, when they start putting tags on things, people embrace those tags. What do you mean, Coach D? What I mean is that maybe bipolar's been around forever. Maybe it's been around forever. But, or let me not use bipolar. Let me use like ADHD, ADD, ADAD, whatever that is. You know what I'm talking about. That's probably been around forever, for centuries. But before they was able to put a tag on it, what did the kids do? They learned how to deal with it. They learned how to function. They learned discipline because their parents told them to sit their butt down and be still. So I'm saying, to a certain degree, sometimes we could weaken. I think sometimes we could weaken things by putting labels on it. Because if somebody could put a label on it, it could make it okay. I put a label on that, now it's okay. So since there's a label on it, it becomes almost like now that it has a title, it's acceptable. And I'm not sure that that's being a strength for us, specifically here in the U.S. I'm just not sure that's been a strength for us, because people are now taking those titles and walking around operating in certain behavior that if it didn't have a title on it, they would probably try to control that behavior a little more. So that's just a thought. Maybe we'll need to do a show on that. Maybe we need to do a show on some things, mental illness. Maybe we need to do a show about labels and tags and how does that affect us as a society? How does that affect the individual? So, again, we thank you all for tuning in on tonight, and we don't want to keep you much longer because we are past our normal time. And I'm stepping back, Minister LaDon. Is there anything you want to tell our audience?
No, of course. I want to thank everybody who did take the time to tune in, who are listening to the internet or listening over the phones. We appreciate you joining with us each and every Tuesday here on Woman to Woman, and we ask that you continue to support us. And not only continue to support us, but send us topics. We want to know what you guys want to talk about. Let us know, and we'll talk about it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us. Know that you are loved and appreciated. Tune in next Tuesday to Woman at 7 p.m. as we continue to bring subjects that matter to women. And also join us on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for Processing the Pain. And we look forward to your continued support, MCD Network, and its broadcast of programs. Thank you so much, and have a great evening.
Woman to woman, songs of life we sing, songs of love and songs of joy, songs of life. Sing it again.
Woman to woman, songs of love and songs of joy. Songs of life we bring. Woman to woman, songs of life we bring. Songs of love and songs of joy. Woman to woman. Okay, Kayla, sing it down low for him.
Ha ha ha.